Welcome to today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger. It is Thursday, March 13. I'm your reader, Doug Kretzinger, and here is our first story from the Globe Gazette. And it's a headline is Before Caitlin Clark, 6-on-6 Blazed Trail. And this article is written by Eric Olson of the Associated Press. There's a picture on the front page. Nancy Schmidt is posing with the jersey and sneakers she wore when she played 6-on-6 basketball at Elkhorn Kimmelton High School in the 1960s at her home now in La Vista, Nebraska. On March 4, Schmidt, then Nancy Wolken, was the third-team All-State pick in 1968. And the rest of the headline says, Ventura's Lorenzen still all-time leading scorer nationally. And there is a picture on the right here, black and white, of Lynn Lorenzen of Ventura, set the still-standing national career scoring record in 1987 with an astonishing 6,736 points. She led Ventura to an undefeated season, winning the state championship over Southeast Polk that year. And this is how it reads. Imagine Iowa star Caitlin Clark playing a basketball game where the rules allowed her just two dribbles before she had to pass or shoot, and it was illegal for her to cross the half-court line. For most of the 20th century, this was girls' basketball in Clark's native state of Iowa. The game was 6-on-6 with three girls on one side of the court playing defense and three on the other side playing offense. The rules might seem archaic now, if not blatantly sexist, but it was popular. Girls' high school games filled gyms to capacity in many towns, and state tournament tickets were resold at a premium, with the finals televised in 9 Miss Western states. Sometimes it was so loud in our little gym that we couldn't even hear the coach when we were in the huddle, said Nancy Schmitz, who starred at Elkhorn Kimbleton in the 1960s when her name was Nancy Wolken. It was really dynamic, a lot of screaming and hollering, and we all loved to play. I should have studied more, but I loved to play. Every game the gym was full, she said. Iowa coach Lisa Bluder, associate head coach Jan Jensen, and assistant Jenny Fitzgerald grew up playing 6-on-6, and Clark regularly gives a nod to her forebears in the sport. When I hear from a lot of people that played basketball, she said, whether it was 6-on-6, however many years ago, I think they're blown away at where women's basketball is now and the platform we get to play on, Clark said. That doesn't come if it's not for the people who came before us, end quote. How might Clark have fared? With her long-range shooting and nifty passing, Clark has become the face of women's basketball and is among the most popular athletes in the United States. She has averaged 31.9 points per game this season and passed Pete Maravich as the NCAA Division I all-time leading scorer. Jensen, one of the state's all-time high school greats, said Clark would have been just as formidable in the six-girl game. Those shots from the perimeter and thread-the-needle passes would have been part of her game. Her snaking drives to the basket, not so much because of the two-dribble limit. She would have probably rewritten all the scoring records, Jensen said. Just scoring and focusing on the shooting aspect, that would have been right up her alley, she said. Iowa high schools could choose to play 5-on-5 beginning in 1984, but many small schools kept playing 6-on-6 until 1993, only 23 years before Clark's freshman year at Dowling High School in West Des Moines. Chuck Offenberger, a retired Des Moines Register columnist and now an author who writes about Iowa news and culture on Offenberger.com, said immigrants from Northern Europe who settled in the state in the 19th century believed strongly in physical fitness for both sexes. Boys and girls worked alongside each other in the farm fields, and basketball was seen as a suitable competitive outlet for all. The caveat was that the sport was considered too strenuous for girls of that era, so special rules were made. Even at that, a federal study on physical education in the 1920s put the kibosh on girls' basketball in some areas of the state. Quote, the conclusion was that girls should not be involved in interscholastic and competitive athletics because it could affect their birthing capacity in later life, end quote, Offenberger said. He went on, the larger schools in the larger towns and cities just bought that lock, stock, and barrel, and they ended their programs, end quote. In 6-on-6, players on the defensive side did not inbound the ball and bring it up after the opponent made a basket. Instead, the referee would throw the ball to half court, where his partner would give it to a forward to initiate the next sequence of play. Games could be fast-paced and high-scoring. Jensen averaged just under 66 points per game as a senior in 1987 at Elkhorn Kimbleton, and she went on to become a national scoring leader and All-American at Drake. Jensen's grandmother, Dorcas Anderson, was MVP of the 1921 state tournament for Ottoman and nicknamed, in quotes, Lottie, L-O-T-T-Y, because she scored a lot of points. In 1926, Irene Silka of Maynard became the first girl to score 100 points in a game. Denise Long of Union Whitten was so dominant, she was drafted by the San Francisco Warriors in 1969 as a publicity stunt. Lynn Lorenzen of Ventura set the still standing national career scoring record in 1987 with an outstanding 6,736 points. She led Ventura to an undefeated season, winning the state championship over Southeast Polk that year. Schmitz, who lives in La Vista, Nebraska, preceded Jensen by 20 years at Elkhorn and played on the 1967 team that was the school's first to reach the state tournament. Her black and orange number 37 jersey, white Converse All-Star canvas high tops, and a scrapbook are among the memorabilia she's kept from her playing days. I was disappointed and a little sad when Iowa girls 6-on-6 basketball came to an end, she said. The game had a uniqueness all its own. Many states didn't offer girls sports until the 1970s, and by then girls basketball had been ingrained in Iowa's culture for more than a half a century, so Schmidt said she and her teammates didn't realize they were ahead of their time. Quote, I felt very blessed to have competed during that era, she said. And many of my teammates and I have known each other since grade school and still maintain those friendships and love to reminisce about our days together on the court, end quote. This story also from page one, its headline is Mason City Airport has new deal with SkyWest. This announcement comes as construction nears completion on the terminal, written by Jacob Schaefer of the Globe Gazette. The skies and the future are clear for takeoff at the Mason City Municipal Airport. The U.S. Department of Transportation announced SkyWest Airlines, operating as United Express, as the airport's essential air service provider, and construction of the airport's new terminal is nearing completion. The 3-year term will start April 1. The Essential Air Service Program, governed by the DOT, subsidizes air service to small communities that otherwise might not have airline service. The DOT sought proposals in January for service in Mason City. It's a contract between them and the airline, David Sims, airport manager in Mason City, said. He continued, previously, SkyWest Airlines took over the Essential Air Service contract on March 1, 2021. About a year later, due to the pilot shortage, they announced their intention to leave the city among 28 other cities around the country. The airport's previous carrier, Air Choice One, flew small, single-engine, 8-seat airplanes, considerably smaller than SkyWest, which operates 50-seat twin-engine jets. It's much more comfortable, much safer, and much more reliable aircraft, so we were fortunate to be able to resume service with a major brand, Sims said. All of the United Express flights out of Mason City connect in Chicago at O'Hare International Airport. Reason being, that is one of the United Airlines' largest subs in the U.S., Sim said. Having the flights is a big, big deal for our airport and a big deal for our community, and the connection with United at Chicago gives you opportunity to have one-step connections to over 200 worldwide destinations, end quote. SkyWest resuming operations won't present a big change at the airport, Sims said. We're continuously working with the airline on flight schedules, trying to improve our connections for our passengers to make when they get to Chicago, Sims said. Additionally, the new contract agreement with SkyWest means United Express flights will be some of the first to fly out of the airport's new terminal, which is both on schedule and on budget, Sims said. Construction is set to be complete at the end of April, followed by completing its parking lot and interior. The first day of operation in the terminal is set to be in July. Mason City Administrator Aaron Burnett said the partnership with SkyWest and the unveiling of the new terminal makes this an exciting time for our area travelers. The terminal project has really been one of the premier projects we've had in the capital improvement plans, Burnett said. Being able to move forward with this is a great improvement, not only for Mason City, but the region, he said. The new terminal, adjacent to the current terminal which was built in the 1960s, is roughly the same square footage, 23,000 square feet, but Sims said the airport will gain efficiency by rearranging the building for modern air travel. When this current facility was built, we did not have transportation security. We did not have screening. So in this building, everything has kind of been shoehorned in as things have evolved over years, Sims said. He continued, the new terminal is being purpose-built and laid out to meet today's traveling standards and the future. The existing gate at the airport holds 15 to 20 people. Upon completion, the new terminal's gate will hold up to 100 people, have a passenger boarding bridge connecting the aircraft directly to the building, spaces for breastfeeding mothers, and service animal relief areas. There are many modern amenities being added that are just expected to be in a modern commercial terminal building, Sims said. We were able to take on this project and be able to do it with a very small impact to the local community. The majority of the new terminal project was funded through the $150 billion Coronavirus Relief Fund, or CARES Act, which additional funding from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the airport's regular Federal Aviation Administration funding. Burnett said the project used a great mix of federal and local funding and that he looks forward to seeing the new terminal operational. It's a beautiful building and they did a lot of work to incorporate those architectural elements the city cares about, Burnett said. It's really an improvement to the process of flying in and to Mason City, he said. While there is no connection between SkyWest's partnership with Mason City Airport and its new terminal nearing completion, Sims said it's two great things to have going on at the same time. Turning to page 2 now, Mason City Dem True announces candidacy for Iowa House, District Number 59, a Globe Gazette article. Jeremy True of Mason City is seeking the Iowa House District 59 seat, representing East Sergorto County in the November 2024 election. The seat has been held by Representative Sharon Steckman for the last 17 years. Steckman announced her retirement from public office last month. She said she is proud to pass her legacy on to True. I have been so proud to represent Northern Iowa, and while I am sad to leave this position, I am so excited to endorse another educator with a passion for our Northern Iowa kids, she said. She went on, Jeremy True will be an incredible advocate for our kids' education, AEAs, and working families. I know he will do a great job representing the voices of our community at the State House, she said. True was born and raised in Mason City, according to a press release. He attended Northern Iowa Area Community College for 2 years before graduating from the University of Northern Iowa. True briefly taught overseas before returning to Mason City. He is a lifelong educator and advocate for quality education for all Iowans, the release said. He worked at Central Rivers AEA from 2008 to 2012 and has been an English language learner teacher for Mason City Public Schools since 2012. In his free time, True was a musician and music instructor. Quote, I made the decision to run for Iowa House because I am tired. My job, my passion, and my students continue to be attacked by politicians in the State House, and it is exhausting. Representative Sharon Steckman has been a fierce advocate for quality and accessible public education, and I am dedicated to continuing her advocacy and carrying on her legacy, fighting for all of Iowa's kids. I seek to restore Iowa's place as a gold standard of education after multiple years of neglect and defunding. I am also very concerned about the rising cost of living, as well as attracting people to grow our state and develop new homegrown opportunities. I am also dedicated to increasing affordable access to Iowa's hospitals and mental health care systems. I am ready to roll up my sleeves and do the work for this community, end quote. True said he brings a wealth of experience and a dedication to public service to this campaign. He said he is dedicated to fighting for quality and accessible public education, lower costs and higher wages for all Iowans, and real investments in Iowa's health care system and mental health care. True also said he looks forward to engaging with his community, listening to concerns, and working together to shape a bright future for Mason City. For more information on True's campaign or to volunteer, you can visit True's Facebook page. In the next article on page 2 of this Gazette, Brown seeking re-election in Iowa Senate District 30. And it says, Senator Waylon Brown, Republican Osage, filed his nomination petition this week to run for re-election in Iowa Senate District 30, according to a press release. I am proud to file my paperwork this week and formally take this step in running for re-election, said Brown in that release. He went on to say, Iowa has a lot to be proud of, but I know there is more work we can do. I look forward to talking more with my constituents on the policies we're working on to move our state in the right direction, like supporting rural health care, implementing policy to ensure reliable and affordable energy for Iowa families, cutting burdensome regulations for small businesses, and tax relief for all Iowans, he said. Brown is the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee. He serves as the majority whip for the Senate Republican Caucus and is on the Administrative Rules Review Committee, Health and Human Services Committee, Transportation Committee, State Government Committee, and Ways and Means Committee. Brown's is a small businessman, a former member of the Mitchell County Farm Bureau Board and the St. Ansgar Planning and Zoning Board. At St. Ansgar High School graduate, St. Ansgar High School graduate, he owns a construction company, and he farms in Worth and Mitchell counties. He and his wife, Julie, have two children. Senate District 30 includes Cerro Gordo, Worth and Mitchell counties, and parts of Floyd County. Brown is being challenged by Republican Doug Campbell and Democrat Richard Lawrence, both of Mason City. And this third article here on the page 2 is Lawrence announces campaign for Iowa Senate District 30. Public school professional and community advocate Rich Lawrence, L-O-R-E-N-C-E, a Mason City Democrat, will challenge incumbent State Senator Waylon Brown in Iowa Senate District 30 representing Cerro Gordo, Worth, Mitchell, and portion of Floyd counties. Brown faces Doug Campbell of Mason City in the Republican primary election June 4. As a father and public school employee, I am deeply concerned about the state of education in Iowa, including the attacks on AEA services, Lawrence said in a press release. In addition, he went on, Iowa has become increasingly unwelcoming for a variety of reasons, and the number of young people leaving our state is very troubling. I am running for the Iowa Senate to make Iowa better for all families, and I plan to do that by giving students the opportunity to go to a fully funded public school with fully intact AEA services, giving Iowans freedom from government intervention in health care decisions, supporting Iowa's rights and freedoms as landowners, and being a responsible steward of Iowa's land and resources, he added in the statement. Lawrence is a behavior interventionist and provides campus security at Mason City High School. He lives in Mason City with his wife, Jennifer, and is the father of 4 grown children. To learn more about his campaign, you can visit his Facebook page, Lawrence for Iowa. Returning to page four now, here's a headline, Fire Crews Battle House Fire Near Craft in Mason City. This is written by Jacob Schaefer. The Mason City Fire Department responded to a house fire just after noon on Wednesday, quickly extinguishing to the flames and securing the property. Law enforcement received the call at 12:21 p.m. March 13 for a house on fire on the corner of 12th Street Northwest and North Polk Avenue in Mason City. With fire crews battling the blaze and the police department closing down a section of the intersection. There are believed to be no injuries in the fire, including pets in the house. Also on this page, Mason City garage fire thought to be caused by space heater, again written by Jacob Schaefer. The Mason City Fire Department fought a fire as the sun rose on March 7 in Mason City, containing the flames with no injuries, according to a press release. Firefighters were dispatched after receiving a report of smoke coming from a garage on the 13th Street Northeast in Mason City at 6:23 a.m. after a police officer noticed smoke coming from the building during patrol. When fire crews arrived on scene, they were met with smoke coming from the eaves of the garage building. After the firefighters gained access to the building, they were able to quickly extinguish the fire. No one was in the building at the time. The fire department reported the fire was contained to the parts tool room and extended to the attic space above. There was smoke damage throughout the building, and the fire appears to be accidental and caused by a space heater. All emergency response crews were able to clear the scene at 8:14 a.m., and the estimated loss to the property and its contents is $18,000. The Mason City Fire Department was assisted by Mason City Police Department, Clear Lake Fire Department Ambulance, and Alliant Energy. Another article, page three. Mason City receives $1 million for industrial park water work. Mason City received a $1 million community project funding award through U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson's office to complete the water infrastructure expansion to serve the Mason City Industrial Park area, according to a press release. This project is critical to several major development projects and the future growth of the local economy. Mason City's water and wastewater utilities, along with rail and interstate access, make it an ideal location for many industries. As a member of the House Appropriations Committee, I have successfully worked to cut wasteful spending while ensuring we bring resources back home to be reinvested in Iowa, Hinson stated in the release. And it went on to say, I am proud to have secured funding to expand Mason City's water infrastructure to meet current demand and facilitate future growth. I will always advocate for our rural communities and ensure North Iowa has everything it needs to thrive. Mason City's current water storage and distribution system is made up of two pressure zones. The Loop Main Project funded in this project will create the capability to provide a much larger volume of water entering the industrial park area from the high-pressure zone side of the distribution system to directly service current and future developments. Several expansions and new industrial projects already are planned in the area. That will greatly increase demand in the near future. In addition to production needs, the increase in water volume and pressure also improves firefighting capacity needs. The new loop distribution main will facilitate development opportunities to over 800 acres of land in and around Industrial Park. Local governments, development partners, and businesses provided broader support of this project and the funding to complete such an essential infrastructure improvement in our community. It looks like we have about three obituaries today. This is for Jane Buck of Savage, Minnesota. Jane Buck, age 83, passed away at home surrounded by family on March 3. A mass of Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, March 15, with a time of gathering from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Both the St. John Baptist Catholic Church, 4625 West 125th Street, Savage, Minnesota. Following the service, there will be a continued gathering time from noon to 3 p.m. at the Environmental Learning Center at Savage Community Park, 1350 Dakota Avenue, South Savage, Minnesota. Jane will be laid to rest at Fort Snelling National Cemetery with her husband. Please wear green to celebrate Jane's Irish heritage. Jane is survived by her children, Stephen, spouse Ann Buck, Robert Buck, Julie, spouse Lee Burnick, grandchildren Molly, spouse Austin Britnell, Jamie, spouse Alec Fisher, Jessica, spouse Daniel Janu, Jennifer Buck, Jack Burnick, Patrick Burnick, Jane Burnick, great-granddaughter Blakeland Janu, J-A-N-U, sister Judy Kleven, K-L-E-V-E-N, other relatives and friends. Jane is greeted in heaven by her husband Robert Buck, parents Leo and Bernadine Donnelly, brothers Richard, Robert, Patrick, and sister Frances, Ballard Sunder Funeral Home, Ballard Sunder Funeral and Cremation, that's where that will be. Marvin L. Crooks, Mason City, 80 years old, 420 South Tyler Avenue, Mason City, died Monday, March 11, at Mercy 1, North Iowa. Memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 15, at West Fork United Methodist Church, rural Sheffield. Visitation will be from 5 until 7 p.m. Thursday at Fullerton Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 123 2nd Street, Southeast, Mason City, Iowa. Full obituary will be on FullertonFH.com, website and Facebook. And here's a short one, and the last one we have today is for Virgil Wagner, January 17, 1935, to March 5, date of death. Virgil D., originally of Thornton, Iowa, died peacefully on March 5. You can see more by going to dignitymemorial.com for more details of his life and upcoming memorial services. Jumping to sports just before we run out of time here, try to give you an idea of what there is and where to watch it or listen to it. And this is for Thursday, which is today. Big Ten for men's basketball. This is that time of year. USA Today, 10:30 a.m. I guess that's the Atlantic 10 tournament. That's 11 o'clock, Big Ten tournament, Minnesota versus Michigan. And let's move down to 11:30, Big 12, to be determined versus Texas Tech quarterfinal in Kansas City. And that's on the ESPN2, I guess. And 12 p.m., SCCN, North Southeastern Tournament, Mississippi State versus LSU, second round, Nashville. 1 p.m., Atlantic 10, USA, the Atlantic 10 Tournament. And at 1:30 p.m., Big Ten Tournament, Wisconsin, second round, to be determined in Minneapolis. Let's see. Iowa. We want to make sure we get Iowa in here. And here we go. 5:30 BTN, Big Ten Tournament, Ohio State versus Iowa, second round, Minneapolis. And then we get down to at 6 p.m., ESPN2, Big 12 Tournament, to be determined versus Iowa State, quarterfinal in Kansas City, Missouri. And the Big East Tournament, FS1, to be determined versus Creighton, quarterfinal in New York. And then, well, that's a pretty good idea of what's going on there. And so that puts us at the time to tell you that you are listening to the Mason City Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger, which we're going to be doing shortly, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Doug Kretzinger. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now it's time to turn to the Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, March 14. And headline, front page, Nebraska native joins Hamilton County Conservation. And there's a picture of Brett Greenfield, who is standing in front of the Briggs Woods, and a nice picture of him, and it's written by Lori Berglund. It says, love of wildlife led Greenfield to the career. Dateline is Webster City. Wahoo, Nebraska native Brett Greenfield has had a most unusual welcome to Hamilton County. A remarkably mild winter has enabled Hamilton County Conservation's newest park officer to get out in the park and wildlife areas early. And they're learning quickly about the diverse public lands that the department oversees on behalf of area residents. With the weather the way it has been, we have been able to get out and about a lot, which is unusual for this time of year, Greenfield said. He continued, "We've been doing a lot of park maintenance, and I'm looking forward to meeting the public. We've been working hard to keep things looking really nice, so it will be good to hear what people think," he said. A 2023 graduate of Wayne State College in Wayne, Nebraska, Greenfield earned his bachelor's degree in criminal justice with a minor in environmental studies. "I knew coming into it that my field would require the criminal justice aspect because we are peace officers," Greenfield said. He continued, "My focus and interest has always been in environmental studies, a lot of biology, and that really gave me the outdoors aspect of what I want to do." Greenfield previously completed an internship with Cherokee County Conservation and began his new role for Hamilton County Conservation on January 8. This year, he will be active in the parks based right now at Briggs Woods. To complete his required training for all Iowa peace officers, he will be off to the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy in January of 2025. Growing up on an acreage outside of Wahoo, that's W-H-U-U, Greenfield said he has always enjoyed spending time outside, particularly in more rustic habitats. "We did a lot of hunting and fishing," Greenfield said. "I've always enjoyed being outdoors, and that's what brought me into this field." He enjoys hunting upland game, as well as waterfowl, and is anxious to learn where the turkeys might be found come hunting season, and he can probably share some secrets as to the hot spots in other states. "All the guys in my extended family would take a lot of trips out to Trenton, Nebraska," Greenfield said. "Some of my buddies and I also like to go up to some places in South Dakota." Well, Greenfield has been impressed with the quality of parks and other public lands maintained by Hamilton County Conservation. "Briggs Woods is really unique," he said. "There's not a lot of timber stands like this. It's here because of the river and that provides a unique aspect." Likewise, he has been spending time at Little Wall Lake and Bell's Mill Park. To Greenfield, they are unique simply because they are county-owned. Few Iowans even realize that the county park system is really only found in Iowa. In Nebraska, he says, everything is either state or city-owned, and that's really the way it is everywhere. Iowa is very unique in the county park system, and that provides a great opportunity for me, he said. Located north of Ellicott and west of Omaha, Greenfield said Wahoo was similar to life here in Hamilton County. It was a small town, just about everybody knew everybody else, and most of them got along pretty good, he said. As spring arrives, Greenfield is looking forward to meeting the public and sharing with them all the unique aspects that Hamilton County Conservation has to offer in its parks and natural areas. Another article on the front page, "Excavator Caused Gas Leak in Fort Dodge" by Bill Shea. And for the second time in as many weeks, a construction mishap caused a natural gas leak in Fort Dodge. The most recent leak was reported at 10:34 a.m. Wednesday on 19th Street between 2nd Avenue North and 3rd Avenue North. Fire Department Captain Jeff Hill said the excavator hit and broke an inch and a half diameter gas line. Mid-American Energy crews were on scene quickly to start making repairs. Firefighters blocked the road and used meters to check their three nearby houses for gas fumes. Hill said no fumes were detected, and no one had to be evacuated. Mid-American Energy workers stopped the leak, and firefighters left the scene after about an hour. On March 4, a natural gas line beneath 4th Avenue North between 22nd Street and Martin Luther King Drive was broken by a company boring underground to install some conduit. Street was closed, and firefighters checked the nearby buildings for the presence of natural gas, but no evacuations were necessary. Next article. Committee declines to discuss controversial public lands bill written by Jared Strong. Iowa Capitol Dispatch. A committee of the Iowa House did not consider a bill it was set to discuss Wednesday that would limit land purchases by the State Department of Natural Resources, potentially dooming its passage this legislative season. Senate File 2324 would prevent the department from obtaining new public land at auction or from not-for-profit organizations that bought the land at auction. It has faced considerable opposition from conservation and hunting groups, counties, and residents for its potential limit the expansion of public outdoor spaces. It is backed by the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation and the Iowa Cattlemen's Association to help keep cheaper farmland available to livestock producers. The bill was rejected by a House subcommittee in February, but the Senate modified and approved it 2 weeks ago. That version was recommended Tuesday by a different House subcommittee that was led by the bill's author, Representative Austin Harris, Republican Moulton. The bill needs support from a full House committee this week to remain viable under Iowa's legislative rules. It had been scheduled for a state government committee vote Wednesday morning, but committee chairperson Representative Jane Bloomingdale, Republican of Northwood, declined to call it for consideration. Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation is grateful to the Iowans who made it clear that they support the growth of public parks, trails, and wildlife areas in our state, said Anna Gray, public policy director for the foundation. She continued, "We are pleased that this bill didn't advance any further in the House and thank the legislators who listened." The DNR is set to recognize the foundation during a Thursday afternoon event at the Capitol for selling 368 acres of land to the state for less than market value. The department said it was equivalent to a $466,000 donation. Harris said Tuesday that the bill was merely meant to codify existing DNR policy to avoid auctions for land purchases. However, that policy is not absolute, whereas the bill has no exceptions. Harris did not immediately respond to a request to comment for this article. Feenstra votes to crack down on TikTok. This app could be banned from the U.S. This is by Bill Shea. U.S. Representative Randy Feenstra voted Wednesday for a bill that could potentially ban the TikTok cap because it is controlled by China. The measure passed on a 352-65 vote and now goes to the Senate. "As a father of four, I believe that TikTok is a serious threat to our national security, our economy, and the well-being of our kids," the Republican from Hull said in a written statement. "We know that TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, is largely controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, which directly exposes Americans to Chinese data collection, surveillance, cyber attacks, and propaganda," he added. He said the legislation will protect Americans from unlawful data collection, keep our children safe from Chinese influence, and prevent other adversaries like North Korea, Iran, and Russia from using apps to spy on Americans and steal personal information. The bill is called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. It requires apps to completely separate from companies controlled by countries. Separate from companies controlled by countries deemed to be foreign adversaries. TikTok is the best known of the apps that would be impacted by this bill. If the bill becomes law, Chinese ownership of TikTok would have to end within 6 months, or the app would be banned in the United States. In brief, the Fort Dodge police are investigating a gunshot that was fired Wednesday afternoon. No one was injured. It's at 12:52 p.m. 911 dispatchers received a report of a shot being fired in the 1600 block of Fifth Avenue South. Responding officers determined that a shot had been fired a block east in the 1700 block of Fifth Avenue South. Witnesses were interviewed and physical evidence was collected. Anyone with information about this incident, including security camera images, is asked to contact the police department at 515-573-1424. Information can also be relayed to Webster County Crime Stoppers by calling 515-573-1444, visiting wccrimestoppers.com, or by texting LEC and the information to crimes number 274637. We have three obituaries in today's paper. Marge Harrington, 90 years old, of Ortho Otho, died March 2 at the Paula Baber Hospice Home. Visitation will be held 10 a.m. Friday, with the service to follow at 11. Friday, March 15, at the Gunderson Funeral Chapel. Interment will be held in the Ortho Cemetery. Survivors include her daughters, Nancy, spouse Martin Brown, Kathy Harrington, Deborah, spouse Robert Hoffner, Sherry Alt, Marcia, spouse Corey Klassen, K-L-A-A-S-E-N, and Paula, spouse Dana Alaya. Many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Marjorie was preceded in death by her husband, Harold Harrington, in 2012, her daughter, Kay Kruger, in October of 2016, son-in-law Roger Kruger in September of 2021, and granddaughter Tammy Brown in February 2023, and her parents. Vanita McKernan, Ocala, Florida. Vanita M. Brain Albrecht McKernan, 77, formerly of Gowrie and Farnhamville, passed away Monday, March 12, at Advent Health in Tampa, Florida. Services are pending to Gowrie Funeral Home. And here's Wes Eral, E-R-A-L, of Fonda. Celebration of Life visitation is 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday, the 16th of March, at Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas. A video of remembrance is at 1:30 p.m. during the celebration, and powersfh.net if you want more information. Turning to sports now, here's one: Buttrick committed on the mat. Late start doesn't deter two-time state Dodger qualifier, written by Chris Johnson. Kane Buttrick took a much different path on the wrestling mat. The Fort Dodge senior was a late bloomer of sorts, fully committing to the sport since finding a passion for it during his middle school days. "I first started wrestling in the seventh grade, which is a lot later than most," he said. "Some of my friends were in it, so I decided to give it a shot and fell in love with it instantly," he said. Well, Buttrick has been a part of the Dodger varsity lineup for 3+ years, improving every season along the way. "Wrestling is a huge commitment and has taken up most of my time in high school," he said. "But having such good teammates and coaches makes it fun to practice and keep the grind going every day." Buttrick finished his career with a mark of 88-37 and was a two-time state qualifier. He went through a gauntlet of tough wrestlers in Des Moines this season as the 9 seed. Buttrick won his opening match by fall and knocked off the number 8 seed in the second round. He lost to top seed Jace Luna of Bettendorf, the eventual runner-up at 132 pounds in the quarterfinals. Buttrick was then knocked out of the tournament with a tight 8-6 loss to 4-seeded Justice Jesseroga of Southeast Polk. Jesseroga placed 4th. "Wrestling has changed my life for the better in so many ways," Buttrick said. "It's created some of my strongest friendships and best memories of high school. Also, the grind of wrestling has helped me get mentally stronger and prepared for whatever comes next in my life," he said. Buttrick was part of a senior class with Drew Alea, Damarian Ross, and Cal Hartman that combined for 496 victories, 12 state appearances, 1 gold medal, 3 silvers, and a bronze. Buttrick helped the Dodgers bring back 3rd place in trophies in both the dual state tournament and traditional state tournament in 2024. "I think what makes our team so special is the bond we've created over the years," he said. "Most of us have been wrestling with each other for a while. We aren't just teammates, we've become family. Buttrick appreciates the bigger picture now that his Fort Dodge wrestling career has come to an end. My favorite moments are probably watching and coaching my teammates from the sidelines and seeing them succeed, he said. Having a teammate win a big match sometimes feels better than winning your own. Buttrick's growth both on and off the mat came through personal investment and a strong support system. My biggest pivot in wrestling was when I started wrestling with Carl Valley at Team Valley in Clarion, he said. I didn't know the first thing about wrestling when I started, but I worked and worked in the off season and made huge gains. Buttrick is unsure. He said, Buttrick is unsure of his future plans. Men's college basketball, next tourney time. Kansas City, second-seeded Iowa State men's basketball squad squares off with number 10 seed Kansas State to start Big 12 tournament action on today. Tip time is set for 6 p.m. tonight. The game will be carried live by ESPN2. The 7th-ranked Cyclones, 24-7 overall, posted a 13-5 regular season league mark behind only number 1 Houston, which was 28-3 and 15-3 in the final standings. The Wildcats, meanwhile, are 18-13 after a 78-74 come-from-behind win over Texas here on Wednesday. Kansas State, which just defeated Iowa State 65-58 last Saturday in the regular season finale, has now won 4 of 6 to counter a 3-game losing streak. Against the Longhorns, 5 players reached double figures for the Wildcats. They were led by Tyler Perry's 21 points, and Arthur Kaluma added 14 points, and it was 8 rebounds, with David Nguessan, G-U-E-S-S-A-N, hope I got that right, contributing 13 off the bench on 6 of 7 shooting. KSU rallied from a 10-point halftime deficit to oust Texas and stay in the hunt for the at-large NCAA tournament berth. 4 Cyclones are averaging in double figures. Kishan Gilbert, 13.5 points. Taman Lipsy, 12.5. Mylon Momsilovic, 10.9. And Curtis Jones, 10.8. Trey King, 9.2. Robert Jones, 8.0, aren't far behind. Gilbert and Lipsy both chip in over 4 rebounds and 4 assists per contest. Lipsy is also among the nation's leaders in steals of 2.8. Head coach T.J. Otzelberger's squad ranks 6th nationally in defense, allowing just 62.1 points per game. Iowa State defeated the Wildcats inside Hilton Coliseum January 24 by a final of 78-67. The winner of this tilt, of this title faces either third-seeded Baylor or Cincinnati on Friday at 8:30 p.m. Championship is Saturday night at 5 p.m. Now the Hawkeyes. Work in progress, Minneapolis, the dateline. The Iowa men's basketball team has work to do if it wants to make an NCAA tournament push. The 7th seed Hawkeyes face number 10 Ohio State at 5:30 today. This afternoon to tip off their Big Ten tourney week. Game starts at 5:30. Head coach Fran McCaffrey's squad is 18-13 overall, a 10-10 conference season. The Buckeyes, 19-12-9-11, are under the direction of interim coach Jake Diebler. Ohio State has won 5 of its last 6 contests to join Iowa in the current NCAA conversation. Both squads will likely need to prevail on Thursday and in the next round of the tournament to move from the outside looking in. Peyton Sanford, 16.2 points per game. Tony Perkins, 14.5. Ben Kirky, 13.5. And Owen Freeman, 10.6, are the Hawkeyes' top offensive options. Sanford and Kirk both average 6.5 rebounds, with Perkins contributing 4.5 boards and 4.5 assists. Freeman, 63.6%, Josh Dix, 56.6%, and Kirky, 54.4%, have all been efficient from the floor for Iowa, with Dix also shooting 44.1% from three-point range. The Buckeyes counter with Bruce Thornton, 16.1 points, Jamison Battle, Rodney Grail, Felix Opera, and Thornton dishes out 4.3 assists. The Hawkeyes have won four of their last six, but a 73-61 home loss to number 12 Illinois last Saturday dropped them back into the pack of NCAA also-rans. Iowa edged Ohio State in the regular season at home on February 2, 79-77. This is a rematch of a 2023 Big Ten tournament matchup won by the Buckeyes in Chicago, 83-75. The winner faces number 2 seed Illinois on Friday in the quarterfinals. And Lipsy has been named semifinalist for Naismith Award. Iowa State sophomore Taman Lipsy has been named a semifinalist for the 2024 Naismith Defensive Player of the Year presented by AXIA Time. Of the 11 players named as semifinalists, three of them are from the Big 12. Lipsy is the only underclassman to be named semifinalist. Lipsy has been stuffing the stat sheet all season, averaging 12.5 points, 4.8 assists, 4.6 rebounds, and 2.8 steals per game. He's one of just 17 NCAA Division I men's basketball players since 1966 to 1977 to average those numbers in a season. Lipsy was named to the All-Big 12 first team and Big 12 All-Defensive Team earlier this week. The number 7 Cyclones returned to action Thursday night, facing Texas or Kansas State in the Big 12 championship quarterfinals. Tip-off is set for 6 p.m. in Kansas City. And we're getting pretty close to wrapping things up here, but still got a little time. This date in history, some highlights. March 14th, 292 days left in the year. Albert Einstein was born March 14th of 1879. And on this date, in 1794, Eli Whitney received a patent for his cotton gin, an invention that revolutionized America's cotton industry. In 1951, during the Korean War, United States forces recaptured Seoul. In 1962, Democrat Edward M. Kennedy officially launched in Boston his successful candidacy for the U.S. Senate seat from the Massachusetts, once held by his brother, President John F. Kennedy. Edward Kennedy served in the Senate for nearly 47 years. In 1964, a jury in Dallas found Jack Ruby guilty of murdering Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President John F. Kennedy, and sentenced him to death. Both the conviction and death sentence were overturned, but Ruby died before he could be retried. Here's some under the title Community Calendar Events. Al-Anon Family Group, 5 p.m. tonight, 1408 Fifth Avenue South. Write on Toastmasters at 5:30 p.m., Pizza Ranch Clarion. Bingo, 6:30 p.m., Opera House, Fort Museum, and Frontier Village, 1 Museum Road. Doors open at 5 p.m., early bird start at 6:30 p.m. Alateen, 7 p.m. tonight, Grace Lutheran Church, 211 South 9th Street. And tomorrow, Friday, Blandon Memorial Art Museum, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., 920 3rd Avenue South. Admission is free. Emmitsburg, VFW, Linton Fish Fry, 5 to 7 p.m., Emmitsburg, VFW, Emmitsburg. Tickets are $12 for adults, $5 for children ages 5 to 12, and free for children ages 4 and under. And we got Knights of Columbus Fish Fry, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Friday. Corpus Christi Center, 405 North 8th Street. Meals are $12 for fried or baked fish or shrimp, $14 for combo dinner, $6 for grilled cheese or kids' portion. Children ages 5 and under free. Takeout available. No credit cards accepted. There's a little short article. In a shopping mood? Commerce Department releases its latest monthly tally of U.S. retail sales today. Analysts expect that retail sales rose 0.7% last month after slipping 0.8% in January. Shopping by consumers accounts for nearly 70% of the U.S. economy, and retail sales are watched closely as a measure of economic health. Consumer spending has been driving economic growth despite high inflation. And eye on inflation. The Labor Department issues its February reading on wholesale prices today. The product producer price index measures inflation before businesses pass costs along to customers. Prices at the wholesale level can provide insight into potential changes in consumer prices. Wall Street expects that it rose 0.3% last month, the same as January. Inflation has been easing overall, both the producer and consumer levels. And Dollar Tree took its biggest stumble of the year after it gave investors a weak earnings report, announced plans to close stores. The company said it will close nearly 1,000 stores over the next few years. It plans on closing 600 Family Dollar stores in the first half of 2024. Well, folks, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette. I'm your reader, Doug Kretzinger. I want to thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, and I want to wish you all a good day.